Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew. And for this segment, we are joined by David Smith of the Robinson Helicopter Company. Thank you, David, for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, good to be with you guys.
So, continuing on with safety, you're here to discuss safety in helicopters. And how do you develop a culture of safety in flying?
Sure. So first, I just want to say we had our best year in company history last year with safety. We had a phenomenal performance by all of our pilots, our service centers, and dealers. So a lot of that's built on things as practical as the training we do. We've trained over 35,000 pilots in our pilot safety course in the factory that's different than, say, a proficiency class or aimed at particular maneuvers. It focuses in on accident investigations and taking apart the fundamentals that led to, obviously, someone's worst day. And that has been extremely effective in removing entire categories of accident from what we had seen really in the 70s and 80s when we first fielded our product. So helicopters are always going to be in a tighter, more challenging environment than many fixed-wing applications because you're flying low, flying slow, flying in places where weather, birds, you know, obstructions all live. So we still see each year there's a lot of agriculture aircraft that we fly, and those ships each year have challenges with wire strikes, controlled flight into terrain, things like that. So we spend a lot of time on training those conditions, what the aircraft can do and can't do, and why the pilots have to be better aware going into the mission. You know, that's the kind of stuff that makes a huge impact.
Well, congratulations on improving and keeping that safety record. That's fantastic. You mentioned that you've removed some categories. Where have we gotten better?
Yeah, so I think one of the most challenging things in helicopters is RPM is your life, and keeping the RPM at the right range, in the green range, is really important. And a lot of pilots, I think, were perhaps conditioned to be more methodical and not necessarily instinctive on the controls to preserve RPM. And so a lot of our training in the early years was training lots of fixed-wing pilots that were converting into rotorcraft to be much more sensitive and aware of RPM droop, which can really be the beginning of a lot of bad things. And so from our perspective, the training that the safety course offered around low RPM and management of RPM was the most effective thing. And so we just don't see low rotor RPM as the causal factor that it was in the early part of the generations, you know, of the industry. So that's been great. Some of that's also been adding governors to our aircraft, things that help manage RPM more proactively, and just, again, getting it more and more into the language of our training.
As not a helicopter pilot, so some of these things are new to me, like managing your RPM. Didn't know that. What kind of tools are there to alert you if your RPMs are going low?
Yeah, so I mean, the most important one is there's usually an audible tone that you hear as your RPM goes below still a very safe range, but an area that you're starting to get below the nominal range. And the problem with RPM in an aircraft of any kind, you know, fixed wing is not too different in that case, is that it droops fast, and once it droops below a certain point, you lose the performance very quickly. And in a helicopter, it's lift, and so it's your primary lifting body. So that's a super important thing to be aware of early. And the fact that your response when you have, say, an engine issue, you need to respond very quickly. And when you hear about auto rotation as the sort of equivalent to a glide, your main effort in that is preserving RPM and managing that as you're coming in for an approach, looking for a place to land, and then using that RPM, which is kind of your cushion, ultimately to land the aircraft safely. And so it's a very manageable thing. And for pilots who do it professionally, I think they go through that journey very quickly and they become intuitive about it. For folks that fly lots of aircraft types, they fly fixed wing, they fly rotary wing, and they ultimately fly lots of types within that, it can be very difficult for them to be fully mentally prepared for that. So a lot of the work we do in the training, and it was, had such effect last year, is just getting folks to really be professional about it, even when they're private or, you know, sort of a more of a passion flyer. They have to spend that time to be prepared for the mission and thinking about those things ahead of time, you know.
And do helicopters have a narrow range, or is it a wide range of the RPMs that you need to have?
It's a pretty wide range, but the way that helicopters fly, you know, the RPM decays fast if you have a loss of power. And so ultimately the solution to that is if you basically drop the rotor pitch, they're more flat pitch as you're coming in on auto rotation, they hold RPM pretty well at that. And you get the updraft coming through the rotor, spins it, keeps it at the nominal RPM in auto rotation. So it is something that really it's just a second or two that you have to do the right things in a loss of engine power. But the thing that we saw as a problem with low rotor behavior was people would get very, very high and they'd get to a point where they'd pull a lot of collective, put a lot of blade pitch in, and they'd stall out the rotor. So those are all things that we were able to train aviators really the last three decades And note this last year, we have the largest fleet we've ever had. We've got the most flight hours that we've ever had. And we still had a phenomenal safe outcome. And that's worldwide. I mean, even places where, you know, sometimes you have even more challenge reaching customers in the corners that we have product.
And we're talking with David Smith from Robinson Helicopter Company about all their safety programs. What your safety course that you have, how long, what is the footprint of that safety course? Is it a, you know, day course? Is
4-day course, actually. So you get a full multiple ground school days and then a flight experience towards the end. It's the cheapest way to get helicopter flight time, honestly. We try to keep it very, very low cost so that customers can, particularly those that are not yet in a career, but they are considering it. We get a lot of students out of all the big flight schools. Almost everyone who's here at the show this week, they all have their students come to the safety course, or some of them we actually bring the course to them. We did one at University of North Dakota not that long ago, trained about 40 of their students on site. And so you can teach that course and then go into the flight portion, where usually you hit just a couple major things in the flight portion. I spend some time on RPM sensitivity and things like that, but yeah, it's a really effective way to get, you know, the safe culture buried in the students early.
So you mentioned the training program. I'm curious what kinds of things you're doing physically within the cockpit to help augment that safety course and bring some more sensors, capabilities.
Yeah, there's some great things. So three big things that are really interesting. One that's a little further out, but it's exciting. But things that are in the aircraft right now, we have impact-resistant windows that have been a standard for higher category helicopters, Part 29 helicopters, for a very long time. Those are, you'll find them on air medical, and you'll find them on big oil and gas helicopters. We've brought that technology down into Part 27 helicopters. So our R-66, all aircraft delivered going forward for the 66, have the impact-resistant windows, and they're certified to take a 2.5-pound bird at 100 knots. And actually, we've seen it hit harder. We had a 4-pound bird at 100 knots in Brazil. We didn't, but our customer did, and he made it just fine. And the other thing that that aircraft featured was a cockpit camera that captured the whole thing in 4K video. So that's another aspect that both protects asset value, because a lot of customers actually lease their aircraft out, you know, part-time to others. And you can manage anytime someone has a maintenance issue, you know, you see an exceedance, you want to know what happened, you can go back and look at the camera and see it. But of course, it also captures what happens in an accident. And we've seen a lot of really good footage of survival accidents and some that were fatals that we can then study and incorporate back into the safety course. And almost every one of them has highlighted something that is a teachable element that could prevent a future accident for someone else. So those two pieces are hard tech that's in the aircraft now, very successful. Future, though, really an exciting thing. We're working with partners to try to prevent wire strikes, which is one of the threats that's kind of unique in the low altitude space, and helicopters live there. So the future of the ability to see wires that are maybe even low obstructions, you know, fence lines and ridges that are maybe may look flat from a, when you're coming in for a landing, but if you hit it, you roll over very easily. All those things can be identified with LIDAR really, really well, fused with cameras. So we've got a really neat technology built off automotive that we think will take another year or two to get fully into the aircraft, but it's a huge opportunity. We've had, for the last 20 years, we've had almost every year two fatal wire strike events, mostly in agriculture where they're flying low around wires. But it's a, something that we see as a huge opportunity to cut another big risk factor out of helicopter operations.
So I know that some helicopters have wire cutters on them. Is that a standard thing? And I'm assuming they don't work all the time either.
That's part of the challenge. Is like an ag ship oftentimes is flying fast when it's spraying or at a relatively high rate of speed, but then it's in a turn, and in a turn they're relatively slow coming back. If you hit at the wrong angle or the wrong speed, it doesn't cut. Sometimes also the wire gauge can be too big. So the best thing, of course, is avoidance. Mm-hmm. One of the things, though, that we see, we actually had a wire strike that we hope to release the video soon. We had a wire strike in an aircraft that was a brand new R-66, and they hit the wire with the new impact-resistant windows, and they actually survived because of those windows. The wire hit the windows hard, guided up, snapped, and they survived. So I think, ultimately, we're tackling wires in several different ways. Number one is still practice avoidance. Know that every river, almost anywhere in the world, there's some wire strung across to move cables or connections, or some just food and things like that. People have to be really careful of rivers. Those are high risk. And then the other one is always fly over towers, not between towers, because you may not see all the wires that are kind of stretched across.
Yeah. So lots of things I don't think about, because I'm not afraid of heights like some of you guys.
Right. Like to stay low so we can see the ground. Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
Right. So your class, it's a four-day footprint. Mm-hmm. Where is it located at?
We teach it in our Torrance factory, which is just south of Los Angeles, kind of the Southern California area. Beautiful place to come, particularly when it's freezing cold and snowy in your neighborhood here in Wisconsin. But I think ultimately we also do take it out in the world. So we teach it in various regions. We just got back from an Australian one, for example, taught a large group there, and did one in Brazil and Mexico. And so we try very hard to bring the course to the places that are hardest to get customers to come to us. But here in the U.S., it's a great trip. You get a tour of the factory, see how we build our product. We're the most vertically integrated, so you'll see raw material all the way to finished aircraft in one trip. So it's a really exciting visit, and a lot of folks get in the habit of coming every few years because the course necessarily will change. You'll see patterns change in the fleet. You'll see the new data from videos and things like that.
So and the safety categories are changing clearly.
They are.
So that
they
introduces
are.
New challenges. So what is, I mean, it also sounds like the course is not just for new pilots, but also experienced pilots as well.
Absolutely. We have a lot of folks that are here at our course once every 3 years or so, and they make it a regular routine. Sometimes their insurance providers recommend it, or they give them incentives to do it. So it's just proven to be a really good first driver of pilot, you know, awareness.
And speaking of here, tell us where we can find you here on the ground.
Sure. We're over at the Vertical Lift Center. That's basically near all the universities and the you know, gateway over there. Really great spot. We got helicopters on display and a number of vendors showing what you can do with helicopters, including our booth, where you can see a little bit about our product.
Well, we really appreciate you coming in and talk to us. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We've been talking to David Smith of Robinson Helicopter, and you're listening to EAA Radio.